bells all ring and the horns all blow, and the couples we know are fondly kissing. Will I be with you, or will I be among the missing? Maybe it's much too early in the game. Oh, but I thought I'd ask you just the same. What are you doing New Year's? New Year's Eve. Wonder whose arms will. When it's exactly 12 o'clock that night, welcome in the new year, New Year's Eve. Maybe I'm crazy to suppose I stand one little chance. Here comes the jackpot question in advance. What are you doing New Year's? New Year's Eve. What are you doing New Year's?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Who was that, Lynn?
That was the lovely Rufus Wainwright singing the song "All I Have Been Hearing All Week Long." What are you doing New Year's Eve? It's very interesting, and the biggest answer I've heard from people is, I don't know.
I don't know what you're doing. I don't know what you do. Yeah, that's been the answer I've been hearing. But, you know, it seems like we're all ready for a change, ready for more transition, and a calendar date seems like as good a time as any to sort of go, yes, it'll be new again.
As the Romans say, it's New Year's. Yeah. Other people have other opinions about that.
But. Isn't it Gregor? Didn't Gregor do the calendar? Anyway, it's 8:05. You're listening to KBOO, your very, very own community radio station. I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn.
And we welcome you to Positively Revolting. We air the first, third, and fifth Fridays of each month. And this morning, we are excited as we are looking back. This is a review show looking at 2011. We are joined this morning by Sarah Van Gelder, one of the founders of Yes Magazine and its executive editor. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning to you.
We're happy to have you with us this morning as, well, retrospective shows at the end of the year, I mean, they're rather classic, they're rather cliche, they're kind of overdone, and yet we felt the need to do one because there's an angle that we haven't heard that we think is absolutely missing, and that is, well, in between the sort of doom and gloom of the worst of 2011, and gosh knows, there's a list that's fairly long there, and the sort of fluffy celebrity news that the zero nutrition, the what is that, junk food, empty calorie news. There's these sort of polarized reviews. But what Lynn and I thought we wanted to focus on this morning were the things that happened that are solidly, positively well, revolting. Things that are good for us, that are actually helping the world forward in its path towards progressive social change. And who better to help us explore that than you? So we thank you very much for being with us. And to just sort of jump straight into things, recently, you have just come up. You are the editor, one of the editors of a very recently released book, This Changes Everything, Occupy Wall Street and the 99% Movement. Now, when I look back on positive changes in 2011, that is the first and foremost thing in my mind, as I've been fairly active here in Portland with Occupy and have seen the incredible ripple effects that this very young movement is having already. So let's start there.
That's a great place to start. I actually asked on my Facebook page yesterday when I come on this show what you know I'm going to be talking about this topic. What do my Facebook friends think is the best news from 2011? And I got a lot of people responding, Occupy, Occupy, all sorts of variations on that theme. So
indeed.
I think I'm with you, and a lot of other people are as well.
Well, let's start with what's so great about it then. Here it is. It's come at us, and depending on which media you've been tuned into, and where you're sitting, how involved you've been, if you actually have made it to any of the movements, you may have a very different view of what Occupy is. So, why do we think Occupy has been such a positive force?
I think it's shifted everything. I mean, that's actually the name of our book. This changes everything. And just to start with, if you remember last summer, the entire Washington establishment was fixated on the debt ceiling and on our fiscal situation in terms of the budget deficit. Occupy Wall Street shifted that entire conversation, because what was being ignored in Washington, D.C. was the fact that the middle class and the poor were and continue to be in serious, dire straits. People are without jobs, young people are graduating from college with huge debt loads, and they don't have the jobs to pay them off. Veterans are coming home from war without a place to go, without the help that they need to recover from the trauma of war. Elderly people are losing their retirement savings. I mean, across the board, we're seeing just extraordinary economic hardship, people losing their homes, people who thought that they were solidly in the middle class and discovering that they may not have a place to live. So this has been just an extraordinary time ever since the meltdown in 2008, which was actually you know, set in motion by years of reallocating the wealth and power of our country to the 1%. So Occupy Wall Street was the movement that finally named what had been happening and brought that out to the fore, which is, you know, what most ordinary people knew, but what the Washington establishment and the media, corporate media, had been refusing to acknowledge, which is that we have a system rigged to benefit the 1%, and the 99% are paying dearly for that. So just that alone, there's a lot of other things Occupy did, but just that alone, changing the conversation, pointing out the reality that we're facing, mm-hmm. busting through a lot of the mythology, just that alone is one of the most important news stories, I think, of the year.
And really making the invisible visible. In so many ways. One of those ways is looking at redistribution of the wealth. I actually heard this phrase in all manner of places in the last couple of months. Well, you know, we what do you want? Redistribution of the wealth? I mean, yeah. And to me, again, it makes the invisible visible, because what we can actually then engage in conversation is, no, what we have seen is a radical redistribution of the wealth into the hands of the 1%. You know, it hasn't just sort of happened accidentally. It is, in fact, a total concentration of wealth over the last several years, ever being more distributed upwards. What we're looking for is a more egalitarian system. And just to be able to engage in that conversation, I think, has been very exciting.
I think you're absolutely right. We have a couple of figures. We did an issue over the summer on the question of how to create jobs and livelihoods for ordinary people. And in our introductory essay, we talked about how the CEOs of the 200 biggest corporations averaged over $10 million in compensation in 2010, which is a 23% increase over 2009. So
jeepers.
How many ordinary workers had a 23% raise in their salary, and how many could even imagine a salary or compensation package that reaches into the millions.
Well, and I don't know. I have to say I've been on wage freeze myself, and in fact have recently seen a wage cut. I'm not sure about other people. I don't think that many people are experiencing 23% increases. Goodness.
Part of this also is that we've got that with the Occupy movement, there's a meme that stuck. Talking about the 99% and the 1%, and continuing as our old dear leader George Bush used to say, you got to catapult the propaganda. And propaganda is not always a bad thing, but to have a message that keeps repeating so people somehow stop thinking that it's so nice to have 1% have so much money because it will trickle down to them, that just isn't working. Don't you think?
That's right. I think that whole mythology about trickle down has been put to rest permanently. I don't think a politician can any longer use that kind of terminology with a straight face.
You haven't watched the Republican debates, have you? Or whatever those things are, whatever that circus is.
Yeah, but I don't think people are buying it. I mean, there's a lot of the mythology that because of the clarity of that statement about the 99% and the 1%. You know, the notion that hard work and playing by the rules means you'll get ahead, that whole idea that I think many, many Americans really believed. And then if they weren't getting ahead, if they were playing by the rules and working hard and not getting ahead, they thought it was their own fault. And so there was this sense of shame and humiliation. And, you know, why aren't I living the way those people on television are living? And I think the Occupy movement just broke people out of that, because they could look around and say, well, oh my God, all these other people, you know, they went to college and they studied hard and they went into debt and worked as hard as they could, and they come out and there's nothing waiting for them. Or these other folks who worked hard at their job all their life, and then the job got outsourced and suddenly they don't have medical insurance and they don't have a home. I mean, people are realizing it's not their fault.
Right.
There's something fundamentally wrong with this system, that ordinary people are suffering so much, and that the wealthy, you know, seem to be able to break the law with impunity and, you know, to just continue to get a greater and greater portion of all the resources of a country that really isn't broke. It's just that all those resources are going to the 1%, so the rest of us just don't have enough to get by.
I want to let folks know that you can join us in this conversation by calling 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, or you can email us with at positivelyrevolting@gmail.com, and we'll be happy to get you on the air.
And we being Lynn and Ani, and we're talking with Sarah Van Gelder this morning, who is the editor of Yes Magazine, and we're talking about positive events that happened this year of 2011. There are so many events. I mean, dragging yourself back to the beginning of the year, it's hard to parse out the positive ones from so many big-time disasters that happened this year.
See, definitely a year of great transition.
Mm-hmm.
And Lynn the astrologer, well, she says we're in for more. Transition, it's not a bad thing. It's just a challenging thing. And so, again, looking at ways things have started to grow and blossom into real tangible social change, creating that world we want to see around us right now in the here and now. That, again, I think Occupy has been a fabulous think tank to try to sort of fathom out what world we do want together, now that we realize that the lies that many people have been chasing are exactly that. They're the fairy tales that sort of keep us into the system and the status quo. But now that there's been such an awakening, I'm really looking at how do we then move forward in making that world, and what has happened over this last year. I know that there's been wonderful work done in community building around the country, in reviving urban neighborhoods, in looking at real needs of people and community solutions. What else? While Occupy has been wonderful and bubbling and moving right along, what else has been happening this year, Sarah?
Well, I think a really big item is a continuation of the building of the local foods movement. And I don't think the importance of that should be underestimated, because we had in the past gotten into the habit of believing that industrial agriculture was going to meet our needs and feed the poor and nourish us and make us healthy. And I think on many, many counts, people have come to realize that vegetables that travel over 1,000 miles are not healthy. That
corn that insecticides itself.
That's right.
Michael Pollan is spinning on that one, I'm sure.
The effects on our water supply of all that excess fertilizer, the effects on farm workers of spraying pesticides and living in the people who live in rural communities of being surrounded by that kind of poison. There's so many ways in which this industrial agriculture system is not working for people. And it's so exciting to watch how people are building the new agriculture system, the new food system. Everything from people, now having chickens in their backyard, to the farmers markets, to the local food in schools programs. I know Portland has a lot of that.
Yes.
The city of Seattle has a whole official policy of the city to build that kind of a local system by connecting the farmers in this area with the consumers. There's a lot of pieces to building a food system, and it's so exciting just to watch the pieces coming into place so that people can get that kind of local, fresh, nutritious, clean food that is the basis of health.
Absolutely.
Cleaner food, healthier for you, locally sourced, helping the local economies, being more sustainable, not contributing to global warming through shipping, strawberries from Chile out of season.
Well, here in Portland,
Oregon.
We even have farmers markets all winter long now, which is, I think, a really great thing myself. I like to go out there and contribute. And we have a caller. Charlene is on the line, and she had a question for Sarah.
Should I go ahead?
Yes.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Hi, Charlene.
Hi, this is Charlene from Hood River. And actually, I wanted to thank Sarah for the wonderful Yes Magazine. I have 2 points to say. The first point is thanking Sarah. And the article that I loved was this summer, and it was about how Hawaiian families resolve conflicts and they all get together and talk it out. It was so beautiful. I don't know if you remember that article I'm referring to with a summer issue.
I remember the article, yeah.
And it was wonderful, and I shared it with many relatives. It was exemplary, and I just adore Yes Magazine. And then I had one other point to share with you all.
Oh, and what is that?
Okay, and related to that, the Occupy is so fantastic. I agree with the wonderful things for the environment, everything you said. And then one more thing, I am bilingual, and I listen to the afternoon KBOO material, the KBOO program in Spanish, and I've been wanting for a long time to let KBOO know that on the Spanish program in KBOO, they were promoting vaccinations, and I'm hoping that KBOO could understand that that's something we might want to investigate. Is not ideal. And I think people who aren't bilingual might not know that was done in the Spanish in the KBOO afternoon. But I'm so grateful for KBOO. I am a contributor. I love KBOO, and I love Yes Magazine, and I love Occupy.
Awesome.
Well, thank you, Charlene.
Thank you, Charlene. We love you.
Thank you so much.
You're absolutely welcome. And 503-231-8187 is the number to call if you would like to join us on the air. KBOO is not a monolithic place. And some programs in the service of community news and education look at various health programs, and some of them are very allopathically inclined. Some maybe not so much. And I think that really in the overall picture, it's one of those things. We are here to provide information from the communities for the communities. People have different ideas of what that information is that needs to be shared.
Indeed. So, Sarah, circling back to Occupy again for just a second, there was a lot of criticism about the movement not being, I always called it coerced, but that's just my opinion, not being focused enough on one particular thing. And how do you feel about that?
Well, I think it was extraordinarily wise and to not go for one demand. I think the people, the call for one demand or for a clear set of demands is almost a way of saying, we want to overall maintain the status quo. We just want you to tell us how to tweak it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And my sense from the occupations that I've visited is that that's not really what people are after. They're after a much more fundamental shift that goes much more deeply than just saying, well, let's keep all this current power structures in place and just, you know, maybe tweak some things to make things a little less difficult.
Right. Maybe let's look at this corporate personhood Supreme Court decision and its recent affirmation. But other than that,
We'd like to find some way to coerce you. Please.
Yeah. I think that that's actually been a very valuable lesson of Occupy. And what I have noticed myself is that people may have come to the movement with that one demand, whatever it might have been for them. But in sharing our stories, we quickly realized how deep the problems are and how interrelated they are, how self-reinforcing they are, and how one simple demand would not cover it, that this country's woes are far more complex than one simple demand could help us fix. And along those lines, the call for a leader. Well, you guys could really get someplace if only you would have a leader.
We've seen how that plays out. I mean, the problem with having a single leader is... it's way too often that they get either co-opted or assassinated, quite honestly. I mean, I think I think people, the notion that one leader will take care of it is the same kind of flaw that we experienced when a lot of people, worked very hard to elect President Obama and then felt that they could go back to life as usual and he would take care of things. Well, it just doesn't work that way. If you're really serious about shifting power and if you're really serious about building a new society from the ground up, there isn't any such thing as one leader who can do that. That's going to take millions of leaders. And that's one of the things I find so exciting about the Occupy movement is it's building in that kind of horizontal distributed leadership so that everybody has a role, everybody's voice counts. Everybody has, if you come to an Occupy site and say, well, why aren't you dealing with climate change or this or that, I think the response is, well, you lead that one. That is part of what we should be doing here. You know, let's make that happen. But you can lead that because you're the one with that passion. And that's how we start building taking advantage of the extraordinary wisdom and talent and skill set that we American people, but all people really have at our disposal, not by dumbing us down and saying, okay, you all go home and watch TV and this or that person will take it from here. No, we all are desperately needed. The challenges we face at this point in history are so pervasive. You know, we need all of our talents to be brought to bear on them.
Absolutely.
I was just going to say there's no excuse for boredom whatsoever. There are things to do on every level on this planet at this particular time, I think. And certainly Occupy did some of that. And then we were talking about the food movement. What other positive things have you discovered this year that people may not know about, Sarah?
I think the question of climate change has got to be front and center of everything we think of at this point because our planet is in such peril. There's only so much longer we can continue increasing the amount of climate gases that are going into the atmosphere before we reach a point of no return. And nobody knows exactly when that point is, but it's, the models predicting what kinds of effects would be seen from climate change, we keep showing up, that the actual data keeps showing up in the worst-case scenario range.
Yeah, so depending who you're listening to, we've already reached the point of no return or it's just around the corner.
Right. So yeah. We really can't afford to not take that on in a big way. So, at the national level, we're seeing that so far the big oil and coal companies have managed to stymie any real action. But we're seeing some really extraordinary creativity and forward momentum coming out of cities, out of states like the state of California, coming out of campuses. We have an article in the fall issue of Yes about university campuses where there's students are insisting that their own campuses get off of coal. What I see happening is that people at the local level where the big oil and coal corporations are less powerful are taking action. And we're going to have to see much more of that. And so far, it's not up to the task. But just like apartheid, it took some time before the legitimacy of that system could crumble enough that the whole system could fall. It's taking a while for the legitimacy of the oil and coal company's case to be thoroughly
dismantled.
Debunked,
perhaps.
That's right.
One of the
and
things
I think that the action will follow.
One of the things I found very encouraging this year was the amount of attention and a passion demonstrated at a national level to stop the Keystone XL pipeline.
Absolutely. I think that's an excellent example. I mean, the fact that a year ago, if you'd asked people what the XL pipeline was, most people would not have been able to tell you. And then this summer, there were thousands of people who were actually risking arrest
right.
to stop that pipeline from going through, and that they succeeded, that they were so strategic that they were able to actually get a delay and perhaps an end to that very destructive project. I think that's a very good sign.
Well, and I understand that there's an attempt to rush a decision in the matter, which many environmentalists are feeling like could actually work in our favor, as there's environmental impact studies that won't have a chance to be done before the signing of legislation that it's included in. So we'll see how that plays out.
The legislation has passed. It's part of the legislation that was also extending the unemployment
right.
benefits and the payroll tax cut.
Right.
So that legislation actually requires President Obama to make a decision in 2 months. But the default, if he makes no decision, the default is that the pipeline goes through. So it actually has shifted the burden of proof onto the Obama administration to prove that it's a bad idea.
Hmm.
So it's actually a pretty serious situation, because he's going to actually have to step up and say, you know, no, we this is not in the national interest. And he's going to have to do that within 2 months to prevent it from going through.
And, you know, of course, one of the arguments in favor of this really just environmental disaster waiting to happen is that it creates jobs. And then, of course, we've seen studies showing that the jobs it creates are either fictitious or temporary in large part.
Something like 50 permanent jobs once it's all built. But also, the other argument that I loved was that it will keep us from foreign oil, and it's a Canadian company.
Details,
I know. But, you know,
well, it's Canadian company, but the pipeline actually goes all the way to the Gulf Coast. Why does it go there? To export oil.
Right. It's going to be going, yes. Thank you. Thank you, Sarah. That is true. One other small piece of insanity that goes with that thing. You know, we have another caller on the line.
Let's go ahead and talk to
them. Hey, Greg.
Good morning, Greg. You're on the air.
Hello. Obviously, in my world, Occupy was the biggest story of the year. And what it did for me was, why did this take so long, for one thing? But it made me feel like I wasn't the only one, which I kind of thought at times, even though I felt that I really wasn't.
Uh-huh.
But for one thing, I'd like to help clear up that everyone says, what are you protesting? And they get a million different answers, and I think I can put it under one umbrella that's two words, and that is government corruption. Because you think of all the other things that people are griping about, what does it always come back to? Government corruption.
I'd say in large part that is a cornerstone to it.
And they also ask, well, what are your demands? Well, my demand is an honest, ethical government. And if you have that, then everything else will follow behind that. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Awesome.
Thanks, Greg.
Thanks very much, Greg, for your perspective this morning. 503-231-8187, the number to call if you would like to join us, or you could email us at positivelyrevolting@gmail.com. You can also Facebook us. Is that a verb now? We've been Facebooked.
I don't know.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you.
You can do that where you can find us at facebook.com/positivelyrevolting.
And we're Lynn and Ani, and we are talking this morning with Sarah Van Gelder, the editor of Yes Magazine. We're talking about positive things, positively revolting things.
That have happened and are continuing to happen.
In this year of 2011.
So, and I guess in looking at, and again, there's, I think, a common thread of sustainability that is really working through all of these things, you know, Occupy at its core. Looking at the localization of our food sources, turning towards local solutions versus corporate sort of faceless big box solutions to our lives. I've noticed in headlines and mainstream media sort of a turning away, a recognition that people are turning away from the commercialization of the holidays and sort of wondering at the causes of that. But again, that's to me a movement towards sustainability and localizing, a movement away from this crazy consumer-driven mindset that has been getting us sort of racing towards our own demise as we use up the planet, etc. So I would see this a very I guess large gestalt of many of the positive changes this year as that move towards localization, that move towards local sustainable communities to meet our own needs, be that our economic needs, our housing needs, our food needs, but turning towards local solutions. Would you agree that's a common thread?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And I think one of the threads that's weaving through that now even more than before is the threat of resilience. I think people have the sense that that the foundations of our society are pretty shaky right now, and whether it's you know, unemployment in one's own community, or whether it's people are concerned about resources like peak oil, that oil and energy supplies will become increasingly scarce and expensive, and that can further upend our economy and our society. There's all sorts of different reasons that I think people have for concern, and I think one of the most natural responses to that is to look for how do you build the resilience of your family, but even more so of your community, because really no family can function alone. It takes communities to create the kind of security and good life that I think we all wish for. So resilience, I think, has become a real watchword, and that has so many different forms it takes. It takes the form of people learning, you know, getting back to basics, learning some of the skills of how to take care of themselves, how to raise their own food, how to make things for themselves. I think the DIY culture is in part about resilience. It's in part about, you know, just not having
necessity.
To rely on corporations and necessity and so forth. But it's in part that I think people are also looking to reducing our dependence on these big corporate systems that really not only aren't serving us well, but aren't providing any sense of security about the future.
Right. All of those things indeed. Well, we have another caller. We have Dan on the line.
Hi.
Hey, Dan, what's up?
Oh, this is Dan from Hood River, and I think Positively Revolting is one of the best programs on KBOO. It's just really informative every time. I never try to, I never miss it if I can. And
well, you can always get us on podcasting, you know, on the website.
I just want to say that the little book that Sarah put out, the edited, This Changes Everything, is just a wonderful little informative book on what's going on with the Occupy movement. So I get 10 of them and then just give them out for gifts. That's how it was introduced to me. And because there's a lot of confusion out there with people who just don't really know what it's all about. They get these negative responses about it basically coming from the 1%. So that's a great little informative thing to give to people.
It's a great idea.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Dan. I really appreciate that.
Sure.
And you can get the book at Powell's Bookstore.
Yes,
and other independent bookstores.
You can get it also in Hood River here for the people that are listening here, and I know you have a big audience here from the Wacoma Bookstore, the independent bookstore here. That's where I got mine.
Wonderful.
Excellent.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Oh, thank you very much for calling.
You're welcome. Bye.
And again, looking at ways that Occupy has made the invisible visible, from what Dan was saying, it brought to mind the charges that Occupy had to face almost, you know, immediately. There we are 2 weeks into a movement, or, you know, in some cities, perhaps even a month into a movement, and suddenly being charged with, you know, causing all manner of social harm from, you know, theft, homelessness, mental illness, drug abuse, sexual assault. All of these things happened because of Occupy, I was told, over and over again, as the encampments actually again made visible what has been happening on our streets. And to sort of shine a spotlight on exactly how badly this system is failing people, and how we have no safety net. Suddenly, this very infancy, or this movement in its infancy, becomes the safety net for a system that is broken. Can you comment on that?
Oh, I think that's a really excellent point. The fact that I was down at Zuccotti Park in New York when Occupy was first getting going, and there was lots of people donating pizzas. So, you know, if you're going to have free food out on the street, you're going to have homeless people who are hungry coming to partake. And the generosity of that food line, I thought, was just extraordinary. You know, I'd showed up just to see what was going on, but I was included as, you know, someone handed me a slice of pizza, and anyone who showed up was fed.
Yeah.
And it's such a natural thing for us to want to feed the hungry.
Well, are people telling you like there was something wrong with that? People are down there getting food.
That's right.
I mean, how lovely.
And it makes sense that if you are homeless, that what a good place to be, you know, to be with other people who are taking care of one another, where there's efforts to create safety. It's not that that's 100%, but that there is effort to create safety. There's great conversation. And the truth is, I mean, there are certainly homeless folks who are there because they're mentally ill or addicted.
But they were there before. You know.
Yes, they were there before. Many of them are, you know, a very high proportion are returned veterans who have not been able to cope with the trauma that they experienced in various wars, and they're self-medicating with drugs and alcohol. So an awful lot of people are veterans. They were there before, and now instead of being at the margins of society, they're also in conversation with middle-class students who are sitting down next to them and finding out about their lives. And, you know, pensioners who've maybe been activists all their lives but may never have actually sat down with a homeless person to find out, you know, what's going on with them. So I think that one of the extraordinary things about the Occupy movement that I'm sure no one planned was simply that those kinds of public spaces make it possible for people to encounter one another and to learn about each other as human beings instead of just the stereotypes or as slogans that are, you know, tossed back and forth by one interest group or another.
That was something that I totally was not, I was not expecting it. And it was such a wonderful, in fact, I think one of the most important things that that we got from the encampment phase, as we could see.
You know, we have another little positive thing from 2011 that a listener, Joe, has emailed us, and he was talking about he had been inspired and reawakened with working class consciousness over the last year, and he's talking about the port shutdown and that whole movement, that it came to light without it simply being a union busting joke. It has come out on the side of the rank and filers and working class more broadly, and people seem to be seeing the labor movement as something bigger and other than a special interest campaign. I thought that was really interesting, because the port shutdown was quite an amazing thing.
Yes, it was. I went to the one here in Seattle, and the number of people who are actually in organized unions has been shrinking over the years, but the people who are interested in becoming part of unions continues to be very large. And a lot of people are, you know, the group in Seattle that I hadn't known about is the truck drivers who are on contract, and as a result of not being employees, they're not treated to some of the basic dignities like access to a bathroom that one would expect an employee to have access to. And so, you know, without a union, you know, they've been sort of left on their own. And this occasion brought attention to their plight, and it, I think, is going to be part of a resurgence in organizing the unorganized. I'm hoping that the union, you know, my sense of the union relationship to the Occupy movement is that it, you know, goes back to the election of President Obama, when I think a lot of the union's leadership felt that, you know, with a good progressive Democrat in office, we'll be on the inside, we'll be able to cut deals, we'll be sitting at the table. And I think they quickly found out that it was Wall Street that was on the inside and they were still on the outside.
Yeah.
So I think as a result, they've been quite open to the message of the Occupy movement and have shown up in some very interesting ways without doing, you know, without insisting on it being the old style hierarchical union boss sort of approach, but more saying, you know, let's see how we can collaborate. Let's see how we can work together. We're not going to co-opt each other's movements. And we are obviously will keep separate.
Which styles, in some ways really goes back to real old style union activities. Instead of that sort of mid-century, I'm trying to think of the guy that was the head of the auto workers. But before unions were quite so, there's corruption that goes on in unions. I don't think of it as quite anything like what's happening in the corporate world. But back when unions started, it was about people helping each other. That's my
understanding. That's right. I think there's a democratic history, you know, that
right.
grassroots militant democratic history to unions that I think the Occupy movement is helping people remember and get reacquainted with. So, it's, you know, there's been all sorts of different variations in terms of how, for example, the Longshore Union related to the port shutdown. It hasn't been a you know, there wasn't clear support on in terms of the leadership for that work action. But I think that there is, you know, there's been a number of cases, for example, in some of the big marches in New York where the unions have come out in a really big way.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. You know, we have another caller.
I've heard this rumor. Good morning, Conan. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
First, I'd like to start off by saying that I feel if our forefathers could come forward in time and see how the country is portrayed at this point, they would not only kick the butts of our government, but they'd also kick our butts for allowing all of this to take place. Second, the biggest news for me would be the Occupy Portland. But I'd like to hear and know more about this NDAA thing I heard about yesterday on KBOO, if that's possible to
gain
more knowledge.
Well, certainly we can look at that briefly. I would consider that to be one of the horrors of this year,
yeah.
The National Defense Authorization Act, which has some very, very troubling provisions. And I'm certainly not prepared to talk all about it right now. But it does have some very troubling provisions that, from my understanding, make it possible to disappear American citizens. There's a provision in the act that says that any person, whether you're a U.S. citizen or not, may be picked up anywhere in the world, including U.S. soil, and held in detention in a military court system if you're considered to be a threat, you know, terrorism, we call it. And, of course, as we've seen in other situations, who gets defined as a terrorist and how this plays out, well, can have some very horrifying results. It basically eliminates 1,000 years of our, you know, court system and habeas corpus and all of that kind of good stuff. There's a provision there that takes us back to pre-Magna Carta Europe.
I found it an odd coinkydink coincidence that happened at the same time as Occupy. How do you feel about that, Sarah?
Well, it's very troubling. I don't have any insights into the inner workings of government, so I don't know if this is a direct response to concerns that the Occupy movement may be getting more powerful and that the tools that the government currently has to contain it, that, you know, whether there are concerns that those would not be adequate to keep it down. You know, I just don't have any insight into what the motivation is, but it's very, very troubling, whatever the motivation is, that American citizens, or really that any people, could be held without in custody
Yes, any people.
And that military tribunals could be, you know, acting in secrecy and without the new due process of law that we expect in a democratic society.
The ACLU is actively working on combating the NDAA, the provisions that are so troubling. Teresa Mitchell on Press Watch on Thursday mornings has definitely been focusing on that for the last several weeks. Lynn and I may focus on it in a show very, very soon because, in fact, it is extremely important to stay informed on this issue and to see where it goes. It's not quite law yet. But it certainly is heading that way and is pretty much waiting for a signature from the president. So, yes, keep on top of that. I believe you can get Teresa's audio on the KBOO website. That's KBOO.FM. Go to Press Watch. That's KBOO.FM/PressWatch for more information there. And the ACLU website also has good information.
And we are Lynn and Ani. It's Positively Revolting Talk Radio, as we have mentioned before. And we're here with Sarah Van Gelder for the last few minutes of the show. Please feel free to call in 503-231-8187. The number I keep giving out to people as my own because I've done so much.
I see.
I know. Hope they don't call the air room. But you call the air room, 503-231-8187, or email at us at gmail.com for questions and comments for Sarah Van Gelder, who is the editor of Yes Magazine, and for her book. What is your book again, Sarah?
It's This Changes Everything, Occupy Wall Street and the 99% Movement.
So what would you, if you had to like just encapsulate that book in a few paragraphs, what would you say about it?
I think it covers a lot of what we've been covering today on our conversation. It's about how the Occupy movement was able to change the national conversation, how it pulled us out of a situation where so many of us were blaming ourselves mm-hmm. for our economic hardships and showed people that they were not alone, that they were part of a system in which the wealth and power of the country have been going to the 1% at the expense of the 99%. It talks about what happened in different Occupy sites, especially in New York City in the early days, and how it was that a few people could get together at a rally in Manhattan and say, you know, we're going to do more than give speeches this time around. We're actually going to set up tents and stay until we see some serious change happen. And how surprised they were, the people who actually organized it, how surprised they were by what happened next. So there's pieces that we worked with some of the organizers. We worked to help them adapt their blogs into mm-hmm. pieces in this book. There's also discussion of what people power can do. We have articles by people like Naomi Klein and Ralph Nader and David Corton about what the Wall Street system is about and what the alternatives are, where we can build a different kind of economy, what some of the issues are around corporate personhood. So what we tried to do is to at the essence, talk about what actually blossomed in Zuccotti Park, but then look at the issues surrounding that blossoming, the issues of people power, of corporate mm-hmm. personhood, of building the economic alternatives that can actually restore America to you know, an economy that works for, I shouldn't say restore, I don't think we've ever had really an economy yeah. that works for the 99%, but build an economy that works for the 99% by through that kind of localization.
I was going to say,
distributed
yeah.
power.
That localization thing, again, one of the things that we found, I think, in encampment to encampment, is we don't yet have the tools to take care of the incredible amount of harm that has been done to ourselves and each other through this system. But we're getting there. And now we have a better idea of what tools we actually need. We can't just, well, gosh, sorry, you're broken. We're going to have to remand you to the system that broke you in the first place. No, I'm just so encouraged by seeing people reach for how we can actually make that world now, right now, with each other, to take care of each other. to share in that responsibility.
I agree. And I think the Occupy sites, people were really digging into that question.
Yeah.
They were trying things out, you know. Let's have actually an experiment with what it would mean to be in a society right here, right now, in which we take care of people. But let's also look at what it would take to build the sustaining infrastructure so that we can have livelihoods, we can feed everyone, we can house everyone, because we actually can do that. We're still smart human beings despite all the things that we've allowed to happen to our country.
Right.
And we can build a better society. And that's the kind of thing that we cover in Yes Magazine. We've been publishing for 15 years now, and each issue we take on a different aspect of what it will take to build that kind of a better world. And you know, after a number of years of doing this, I think, well, I think we've got that one nailed. There's probably not a lot more to say about that. But then as soon as we start looking into something like the local food movement or restoring cities, I just find all these things that I hadn't ever heard of that were happening. There's just so much more to be found. So there's really an extraordinary blossoming of this kind of creativity and this kind of interest in building the kind of society that can sustain us without depleting our resources, without depleting our climate, without impoverishing people. All of those things are very possible, and people are going about doing those things. And you know, what we publish in Yes Magazine is just a way of spreading that news around so other people can get inspired and get ideas about how to do it themselves.
And you do it well. Let's go ahead and talk to Rich on the line. Good morning, Rich. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning. How are you guys?
Doing well.
All right. I just wanted to throw a couple quickies out there. The positive thing I've noticed this year was the recent Vermont healthcare deal. I don't know too much about it, but it sounds like it's a step in the right direction. And then I wanted to mention a book that kind of offers a neat perspective on, you know, perhaps any of this stuff, but like the Occupy thing. And it focuses kind of on why having one leader is kind of a bad idea, and the power of having more of a flattened system like you were talking about earlier. It's called The Starfish and the Spider, and I recommend it. It's a really short read for the listeners. So anyways, I just want to throw those out there.
Thanks. We love book recommendations.
All right. Have
Thanks a lot.
Awesome. Bye-bye. And we have just a couple moments left, and we have Bill on the line. Good morning, Bill.
Hi. I just wanted to mention on the Defense Authorization Act that two excellent sources on the web are emptywheel.net and Glenn Greenwald at salon.com.
Excellent. Emptywheel.net and Glenn Greenwald at salon.
Yes.
Thank you, Bill.
You betcha. Thank you all. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Bill.
And we have just a moment or two left with Sarah Van Gelder to wrap up. Looking forward to next year and our continued transitions, our continued evolutionary process. I've been one of the facilitators for the Occupy Portland folks, and I love the fact that as we are developing ideas with each other during our general assemblies, if we decide we're going to actually talk about it, we talk about the evolutionary process of the idea to get it from where it, you know, was presented to how it will eventually be the strongest, most helpful idea we can go forward with. So in our evolutionary process of the revolution that we are engaged in, Sarah, how is this looking for next year? What things are you excited about? What things should we be paying attention to add energy to make this world a better place now?
Oh, good question.
In 2 minutes.
Sure. Well, in terms of the Occupy movement, I think some people are wondering if it's on its way out, and I don't believe it is. I believe right. that the winter weather plus all the police crackdowns are creating a different phase for the movement. There's a lot of infrastructure building. There's a lot of conversations going on behind the scenes. And my sense is that come spring, we may see an American spring that's every bit as powerful as the Arab Springs have been.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say stay tuned on that count. the healthcare issue that the caller mentioned in Vermont, you know, Vermont essentially passed something very similar to a single payer system. There's still some work to be done to get it implemented, but I think it's a great next step. My sense is that the Obama healthcare reform is in trouble for a number of reasons, but the most fundamental is that it still keeps too much power and too much money going into the hands of the big insurance corporations,
right,
and the big hospital establishments and drug companies. So as long as that happens, healthcare will continue to be expensive and continue to threaten to bankrupt our country. So my sense is that many more localities are going to start looking at something more similar to the Canadian and now the Vermont system, and that may take that happening state by state rather than nationwide in order to move that process forward. And I think the last thing I'd say is we haven't talked about the elections, which is very interesting given that this is going to be an election year.
you know, you're right.
We were talking about positive. I'm sorry.
Well, without getting into the candidates, which we don't have time to do and probably don't want to do.
Absolutely.
I think what I would want to say is that the cleaning up the elections is absolutely essential. And that means getting money out of politics, as one of the callers talked about, dealing with the Supreme Court Citizens United case. I think we should be anticipating a lot more action on that, from the Move to Amend to the Free Speech for People to all the different organizing that's happening around ending corporate personhood. But there's also the whole question of the suppression of voting among especially vulnerable people, especially the Democratic base. There are these laws, the voter ID laws and so forth, that are supposedly about preventing fraud, but are actually about suppressing
the
vote.
Well, there is no voter fraud.
That's right.
Yeah, there's election fraud.
That's right. So those, I think, are some of the key things to be watching for in the coming year. And I think I'm very excited. I'm much more excited than I've been for a long time about the possibilities that people power can really start moving some things forward.
Excellent.
From Sarah, your mouth. Thank you, Sarah.
Sarah Van Gelder, thank you so much for joining Lynn and myself this morning on Positively Revolting here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland. We hope to talk to you again in the future, and thanks for all of your great work at Yes Magazine.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Excellent. Thank you. And we wish you a happy new year.
Indeed. We're out of here. Stay tuned for Andrew Geller next at 9 o'clock.
And we'll see you next week.
I was seething, your mother bursting, it was freezing. She said, it looks like it's trying to rain. I was lost, I felt seasick. You convinced me that he left. You said, keep talking, but don't use it.